Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
President Thomas Jefferson joins us now on WGN Radio. Sorry to make you wait, President Jefferson, but that was breaking White Sox baseball news. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, my dear citizen, but I'm fascinated that you have a machine that tells you the weather and can look back on weather patterns over a number of months or years. I worked hard all my life to create the conditions under which we could record weather data and maybe compile it and compare it, and at some point perhaps even predict the weather. So you have a machine, something, a robot, a device that tells you, that speaks to you about weather?
And some of that information is predicated on things people like you kept. Your fastidious records of the weather help us know about the weather today. So thanks to you. Props for that, Mr. Jefferson.
We were very low tech, to use a term from your time, but we were doing these things. We were engaged in the classification of knowledge and library classification and the periodic table. And this was the age of the encyclopedia and the age of Linnaeus, in which he gave plants and later animals binomial Latin names, and we were classifying the clouds and so on and so forth. We were trying to begin systematic measurement of everything so that by your time you would be able to draw conclusions from all of that very basic and sometimes tedious work that we were doing. When I sent Lewis and Clark up the Missouri River, they took the weather every day, twice a day, at my request, once at dawn, and then again about 4 p.m., and this included cloud cover and precipitation and temperature using the Fahrenheit scale, etc. So this was an early attempt to build the database from which I hope you are now benefiting.
Think about it, though. So there's a president of the United States, maybe a secretary of state, but a high-ranking U.S. government official. The president of the United States keeping weather records and gardening and involved in architecture and all of the disciplines that you mastered and employed. Today, we don't in any way, I don't think, expect our, you know, Barack Obama wasn't key. The only thing we would ask our presidents today would be to do good NCAA college basketball picks. If they had special skills they brought to the White House, real estate or diplomacy, that's a bonus. But I think today we pick presidents more for their personality and their charisma. And the idea that a president would be taking 5 weather measurements a day would seem odd. I'll just put it that way.
Scientist and a man of letters and a great exemplar of the Enlightenment, of curiosity, much more than I was a political figure. I regarded myself as a farmer first and a scientist second, and I was a reluctant politician. So I think we had a different attitude towards the Republic fundamentally back then. But I can tell you this, I took enormous delight in taking down weather data and measuring things and making grids and charts.
Yeah.
Nothing made me happier than to chart something. And this brought order to my life, and I hoped it would have an influence on the larger culture. But, you know, a president or any political figure is under enormous stress much of the time because no easy decisions ever reach the desk of someone at that level. And so you have to work off that stress. And for me, measuring things, counting, taking my thermometer out on the White House grounds, that gave me a sense of calm, but also it made me think that I was actually contributing something to the future of human happiness.
You are going to be appearing with us in Downers Grove on May 18th, May 18th at the Tivoli Theater. Or do you say Tivoli? Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove, May 18th. So you and I will, as we have in the past, walk onto stage. I'll visit with you for 30, 40 minutes. Then we'll take questions from our listeners. We can do that now. That is from the people in the studio audience. They'll literally get a chance to ask one of the founding fathers, what do they think about current events? Or maybe you've got a question about things that happened a couple of hundred years ago. Jefferson on stage at the Now I've got a mental block about how to say the name of the theater.
Well, Tivoli. So Tivoli was the home of Hadrian. So Hadrian, the Roman emperor, wanted to get away from the press and the and the disease and vulgarity of Rome. So he built himself a kind of model Mediterranean villa about 20 miles from Rome and called it Tivoli. And the ruins of it were being uncovered in my time. It was a magnificent, it was kind of a like a Disney sort of world, to use a term from your era. And Tivoli was this place where the Roman Empire was seated for the time of one of the greatest and most learned of all the emperors, Hadrian. So it will give me pleasure to talk with you about, we could translate some classical texts together on that stage.
Yeah, let's not. So that's, you would know all of that, by the way. I didn't know you knew that. So that's in Downers Grove. The show is at 10 a.m. at the Tivoli Theater, May 18th. The most important thing is that you know May 18th at that theater in Downers Grove, 10 a.m. You cannot get tickets yet. I'll tell you later this week when you can. But I just wanted to sort of remind folks that the show is coming up and circle it on their calendar. One other thing about the upcoming show, Mr. Jefferson, we didn't know exactly what to call it. But the working title for the show this spring is going to be something like, "Hey America, Jefferson's coming and he's ticked." I don't know if that is a fair assessment, but I was worried that you'd look around and see $430 million going to a baseball player and a president who you might take issue with, or a Congress that you might take issue with, and I would think you would look sternly at us these days.
I don't think I was really ever very angry in the whole course of my life, and I don't think I ever used the word ticked, but I understand the principle. I would be disappointed. I would be disappointed that you have strayed so much from an agrarian republic. I would be disappointed that that you have allowed yourself to slip into this constitutional crisis that you're in and deepening. I would be dismayed that you don't educate the people so that they can be on top of their own destiny and govern themselves in a more profound way. I would certainly be upset by your national debt and your international footprint of bases and armies and navies all over the world. But you know, sir, you know this well. I believe that the earth belongs to the living, not the dead, that the living get to build whatever world they think best for themselves. And even though I might not approve of it or admire it, it's your world, not mine. I lived between 1743 and 1826, and I could no more anticipate the future than perhaps you can.
All right, so here's the text and the phone calls. I'll ask them as quickly as I can. From our text line, you can call in, too. And, Mr. Jefferson, be as brief with your answers as you can. Are you ready?
Yes.
John, please ask Thomas Jefferson if eliminating the Electoral College would allow New York, Florida, and California to choose the president for Iowa, North Dakota, and Vermont. What's your reaction to that?
I'm for getting rid of the Electoral College because it was put in there by the Founding Fathers, of whom I was not one, to stand between the people and their choice for president. And as you know, I was the victim of the Electoral College in the election of 1800, so I would eliminate it.
So if it was a popular national vote, which Elizabeth Warren wants, just counted all the votes in all the states in principal territories that get to vote, just take those votes, count them up, whoever gets the most votes wins. That's how you think we should do it?
Well, I don't know that I should dictate this to you, but I will say this. In your last election, I'm told that one candidate received about 3 million more votes than the one who won, and that's sort of within the range of what you might consider to be acceptable. What if one candidate outdistanced the rival by 25 million votes and still lost in the Electoral College? In other words, at some point, the Electoral College becomes an institution of shame to a people that governs themselves. 3 million votes may be under that radar, but at some point, if that distortion gets too large, this will create a huge legitimacy crisis for the Constitution and for the person who's the putative winner. So why not move towards a situation in which it's closer to actual democracy, in which the people's voice is determinative and not filtered through a kind of Vatican-style college of cardinals called the Electoral College?
We can talk more about this on stage, because I know the problem with what you just said is, though, that delegitimizes North Dakota and Iowa and Vermont, that those people feel like they'll never get a say. It'll always be Democrats from big city states, and that's just the way it's going to be now.
Well, I'm from Virginia, which was the biggest and most populous state in my time, and we thought that was about right. We did not want to have to share two votes in the Senate Rhode Island or Delaware.
Yeah. All right, so maybe that makes sense for the Senate to find some way to appropriate representation from smaller populated areas, but should we keep that in mind when we're counting for the presidency? We currently do, and you don't think we should. Here's another question for you. Should the government regulate social media? Wouldn't regulating them hurt free speech?
Yes, I'm essentially an absolutist with respect to the First Amendment, that we have an essentially unlimited right to freedom of expression. And, of course, that freedom only matters when it protects dangerous speech or obnoxious speech or even seditious speech. We don't need a First Amendment to protect polite speech. We need a First Amendment to protect speech that the people in power might find objectionable. And so I think we must be exceedingly careful never to erode the nearly absolute provision of the First Amendment.
King John, please ask. That's what they call me sometimes. Please don't take offense.
Sorry to hear that.
King John, please ask Mr. President, how long was his campaign for the presidency and what did it cost?
It cost nothing. I never left Monticello. It lasted for, I suppose, 2 or 3 months in 1800, but I never gave a speech. I never left the environs of Monticello. I never made a campaign stop. I never issued a statement or what you'd call a news release or media. I never asked for a vote. I never raised a campaign contribution. So I would say for me, zero, but my agents, my friends, as we called them in the 18th century, would have been writing letters for a few months before the election.
Part two of this texter says, well, then what does he think about people campaigning for over 2 years and spending millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, if they're the party nominee for president?
I can say this. I once went to Milan in northern Italy and saw the great Duomo, the cathedral there, and I said, this is one of the greatest examples I've ever seen of the utter waste of human money and resources. If you'd taken all the money that built that cathedral, you could have paved a bridge from the Mediterranean over to the Near East. Think of what you could do with this sort of money if you put it to the amelioration of the condition of mankind, to roads, to universities, to libraries, to art galleries, to statuary,
right,
to poetry, to dance, to music.
We got it, Mr.
The education
Jefferson.
Of our children.
Yeah. Question for President Jefferson. When Aaron Burr killed Alexander Hamilton, did Burr's fellow party members support and defend Burr, or did they denounce him? I think there's a subtext to this question, but what do you say about that?
He was indicted in New York and in New Jersey. He fled. He was slightly rehabilitated for a short time, but killing the great little Hamilton was a career-ending move for Aaron Burr. He eventually left the country and spent a number of years living abroad. No, we did not rehabilitate him, and I dropped him from my ticket, as you would call it, for my second term in 1804.
I think the subtext here is, though, sometimes politicians these days say terrible things, say about John McCain, and it seems like the party members are loath to denounce the party head. I don't know if you have any further comment on that, but I think that's what that may be driving at.
Well, this always happens in my own case, although I never would have admitted this in my lifetime. The Sally Hemings story broke in 1802. I was serving my first term. Those who hated me made much of it, and it was in sermons and debated in legislative sessions in New England, and people found this to be absolutely appalling. And people who were my supporters said, this is a private matter. We don't even know if it's true. We should be careful not to let people's private lives be ruined by rumor and public innuendo. So I think it's fair to say that this sort of politics is eternal, but you must draw the line at the rule of law. John Adams said it best, and no man is ever above the law. Your behavior might be objectionable, but if you break the law, then the country has no choice but to remove you.
Mr. Jefferson, as a founding father, you and your friends put checks and balances into the Constitution as a form of government as possible and as many as possible, and yet this year it seems the president seems to be doing everything he can to become king. What did you guys miss here? The president's way too powerful.
Well, I always felt that the impeachment clause in the Constitution was not very apt. You know, if you set the bar at high crimes and misdemeanors, then it's going to be quite difficult to get rid of a president who shows malfeasance in office, who's incompetent, who perhaps is senile, or somebody whose behavior is so out of character with the idea that we have of public virtue that we just can't stand to have such a person leading the country, and particularly as commander-in-chief. So I was for expanding the idea of impeachment. I spoke of a few cheerful impeachments with respect to the Supreme Court,
yeah,
because we need that tool at times, and we can't wait until there is a crime that a majority in the House and a supermajority in the Senate are willing to prosecute.
Two quick questions here, one from a listener, one from a texter. That is a caller and a texter. Mr. President, were you aware of the great artists of your time, like Mozart and Beethoven?
I knew Mozart's work. I saw some of it during my time in France, some of his operas, including his comic operas, and I appreciated his music. Music is the favorite passion of my soul. I was aware of Beethoven, sort of, but I can tell you this, as a rationalist, as a lover of Bach, I found it too wild and romantic.
Well, then I won't get you tickets to Lollapalooza, because we were talking about the lineup in August, and that thing's going to rock, boy.
Anything that ends with Palooza, I'm not going to attend.
Last call. Dennis, you're on WGN. What was your question or comment for President Jefferson?
Yes, I wanted to know what the difference is between the verbiage, between the way the Second Amendment was written originally and how it finally got approved, and how did Patrick Henry get involved in that?
I need a short answer, Mr. Jefferson.
I will make it short. We should talk about this when I come to Tivoli. Patrick Henry was not involved in it. The Second Amendment was written by James Madison. It did not get much debate. It probably should have been debated longer than it was, but the first Congress saw this sort of as just boilerplate and public relations. But I take it very seriously. I believe a free man is a man with a gun.
The texter said, what does he mean by a well-regulated militia? Again, you didn't write that, but that's something we'll have to take up because...
Mr. Madison could answer that question, but the basic sense of it is that we don't want a professional standing army. We don't want a permanent army, a permanent navy, in your time a permanent air force, a permanent coast guard, etc. We want a people's militia, and in that case they have to be able to supply their own weapons or they're not a militia.
Wonder if I should tell him about the Space Force. All right, Mr. Jefferson, so at the Tivoli Theater... In where are we going to be, Aleph? Where's the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove on the 18th of which month, producer Aleph? May at 10 a.m. Tickets are not on sale yet, but at the Tivoli, Downers Grove, 10 a.m. May 18th. May 18th. Make sure you reserve some time. Tomorrow I will tell you how and when you can get tickets. As always, Mr. Jefferson, quite a pleasure to talk to you, sir. I'm looking forward to our springtime visit.
I'm going to bring two copies of Homer's Odyssey in Greek and two thermometers and a theodolite. We'll have a great day.
That's Thomas Jefferson. He's your third president. Details on tickets tomorrow. Please circle May 18th. I don't even know what that last thing was he said.